May, June, or the 5th of never? That's the question. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
It's great to be back with you, Barry. To quote Donny Osmond, until the 12th of never, and that's a long, long time.
It's the 12th of never. I had that in the back of my head. I was thinking 5th of never for some reason. So I'm glad you understood my pop culture reference.
There. I immediately parsed what you had said, and I said, I know where he's going.
Oh, there you go. That's right. That's right. Well, you know, it was almost like a song, as the other song says, but it wasn't quite there. Yeah, so, Chuck, obviously, here we are, moving toward the end of April of 2020, a year that has been unprecedented in its surprises, I guess is a way to say it. Although, if you go back and talk to some of the folks who are still alive from the Greatest Generation and who basically lived through, maybe as children, the Great Depression, the 1920s, the 1930s, into the World War, we're pikers, but again, we're almost 100 years later going into something that honestly is, I'm not really sure how to describe this other than this has been a man-made catastrophe, Charles. And I mean man-made from the point of origin forward. As everybody is painfully well aware, we are into at least now more than a month, 5 weeks of a governmentally imposed shackling of our economy, our way of living, our ability to freely move and associate and exercise many times our First Amendment rights, Charles. All brought on by a microbe, or the fear of a microbe, I should say, because the microbe itself didn't bring any of this on. It was the fear of a microbe.
It's the fear of the microbe, yeah.
And as we are a biblical worldview-based program, I would have to argue the underlying, whether it's unconscious, subconscious, or barely conscious idea that somehow man is in control of his own fate, that we are the captains of our personal ships, and that we can determine whether we live or die, that we can determine whether or not good or bad things happen to us, and that it's solely our call to make, and the stronger you are and the more power you have, the better you are equipped to make those kind of calls. That's kind of what we're operating under in this country right now, Chuck. I mean, if you look at our governor, Mike DeWine, his director of health, Dr. Amy Acton, and you look at some of the things that they're up to, it's hard not to have the, you know, sneaking, scratching behind the back of your neck suspicion that somewhere along the line, one or both of them might be actually enjoying this little power trip a little too much, of being able to control the lives of all of their fellow citizens by writing an order and basically saying, you can't get a surgery you need, or you can't go to the store, or this store can't be open for you because, well, the bug, the COVID-19. Now, I know immediately upon saying that, we're going to have some people who are listening to this are going to be like, well, you guys just don't understand. It's dangerous, blah, blah. Yeah, it is dangerous, okay? I'm not discounting that in the least bit. What I am discounting is the idea that somehow this COVID bug is so much more dangerous than every other malady that is out there in our culture, whether it be the flu, whether it be Ebola, whether it be Marburg, whether it be West Nile virus, whether it be starvation, hunger, depression, car wrecks, getting a deer running out in front of you, or my, and I'm not even saying favorite, but the one that I think is the trump card above all trump cards in our culture, abortion. It's no less, it's no more or greater a existential threat to our lives and to our culture and our society than the Wuhan virus. You look at numbers, Chuck, and, you know, we've talked about this. Is the coronavirus, COVID-19, the Wuhan virus, the China virus, whatever you want to call it, and I frankly don't care. We're not politically correct around here, so we're not going to go quail and blanch because somebody called it by the area of the world in which it first appeared, which is basically what we do with a lot of viruses. That's the reason why we have West Nile and Marburg and others, is because that's the areas of the world in which they first popped up and started, you know, having impact. I don't care what you call it. The point is that, yeah, okay, is it a little bit more dangerous than the standard annual flu shot, flu that they can't come up with a shot for to protect us from? Yeah, it is a little bit more dangerous than that.
Yeah.
Is it more dangerous than being an unborn child in the womb of the modern American feminist? No, it's nowhere near as dangerous as that. Worldwide, Chuck, if you look at these numbers, and I've seen one like up through April the 4th, you know, worldwide deaths related to the Wuhan virus are, I think, somewhere in the 130,000 range. The deaths related to abortion on demand worldwide is over 10.2 million already for just this calendar year. So I think we got a bigger pandemic happening in many of our communities than this microbe.
Oh, well, if you put it that way, yes. Look, we've allowed ourselves to be frightened out of our boots by a microbe, which we have no power really over whether we get it or not. Now, we can sure. reduce our probabilities by doing all these things, wearing masks and scrubbing our hands and all these things. But the fact is that... you know, the UPS man can come and hand you something. I'm not picking on UPS. It could be FedEx. It could be your Amazon delivery man. Could hand you a package.
But it can't be your local florist because they had to shut down.
They had to shut down, yeah. And can hand you a package then on the surface because he touched it and he has it and he doesn't know it. Passed it along to you.
But that doesn't mean that it's not a death sentence for you necessarily, because you could... Get the microbes, have them, and your body could build up antibodies without you ever having. You could be what they call asymptomatic. You never show a symptom.
It's nowhere close to a death sentence, because huge percentage of the people that have the are being tested and being discovered as having had the virus or have the virus have absolutely no symptoms. Others have a runny nose, a sore throat. Some others get a cough and then it goes away. It's a huge number who never really know they've had the thing and yet have had it. And, that means that the chances are, you know, the actual death rate, as more and more and more and more people are tested and are antibody tested, especially, hey, you had it because you have, or you were at least exposed to it because you have the antibody, the death rate goes down, 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 down. Now, remember, I think we took a little bit of heat because I made the claim that it was going to be somewhere around 0.4% was going to be the final number of fatalities. And guess where it is in places where there are extensive testing programs?
0.4 to 0.5%.
It's 0.37%.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? That's 0.4, depending on how many significant digits you carry. So I'm not far off, and it's based on the fact that I thought it was a little more deadly than the normal flu, because there are people who are highly susceptible who are getting it and dying. Listen. One thing I know is I have someone who's in my church who had a close friend who went in the hospital, had the thing, was in really bad shape. They gave her hydroxychloroquine. She had been on a ventilator and had started to recover. But at the end, they started weaning her off the ventilator, and in the end, she did die. And she died from what? Well, okay, she had the COVID-19 virus, and it did its damage. But the ventilator also, here's the problem. You're forcing air into people's lungs, which does damage. So you've got a virus doing damage, and you've got a ventilator doing damage. The idea is to get the blood oxygen levels up and keep them up. The problem may not necessarily be with the lungs, although that's a big part of the problem. Let's not kid ourselves. The virus affects the lungs. Don't let it be said that I said, oh, it doesn't have anything to do with the lungs. It does.
Right.
But I think the COVID-19 virus, I just read an article that basically said it also affects the red blood cells. One of the reasons that people are symptom-free in their lungs but are having their oxygen levels drop is because the COVID-19 is affecting the hemoglobin levels in the red blood cells by attaching to those. Well, that would answer a lot of questions, and it would also be a reason to look a little more closely at the way they're treating things. However, they're using the methods they're using to treat them because it has a track record. So it's hard to get people off something that works for something that may or may not work. And I get that. You want a maximum. But this is the only person who I'm connected to that I know of that has had COVID-19 and died from it. One, and it's one person removed from me. And if you ask most people, not everyone in this audience is going to be that person. Most people are at least one person removed from someone they know who has had it and has had to be hospitalized. That should tell you something. Now, you know, you brought up the greatest generation. Most of those, if you think about it, if you were 20 years old in 1941 when the war started, that means you were born in 1921, which means you're 99 years old right now if you're alive.
Right.
Okay. Now, what does that mean? They lived through some seriously scary times. Regarding communicable disease, polio, diphtheria, things that we don't even think. When was the last time you heard anybody complaining about their nasal diphtheria or the other forms of diphtheria?
I don't think I've ever heard it.
Yeah, if we have it, we have such mild cases because we have that diphtheria vaccine, DPT. If you've ever, all your kids get DPT, diphtheria pertussis. We don't see much pertussis, although we had a spate of it 5 years or so, 5 or maybe 10 years ago. Maybe longer. It may be, but there was a spate of pertussis. Do you know what pertussis is?
Yes.
Whooping cough.
Yep, whooping cough.
There was a spate of whooping cough, and DPT, T is tetanus. And generally, when you go in for a tetanus booster, they give you a DP booster along with it. Last time I went in, I refused the DP booster. I took the tetanus shot. Please don't follow my lead. Just do what you do. I recently had something that I was pretty sure was whooping cough. And I said, I should have the immunity for it. And I did not require hospitalization. But think about these people that were the greatest generation. That every August, you had mothers who simply would not allow their children to go swimming in a local lake because there was a good chance, not a great chance, not one in five or anything like that, but they could come home with polio. It was called the swimmer's disease because kids would go out on exceedingly hot days and go swimming and come home with polio.
Oh, yeah.
When I was a kid, I still remember being in the hospital for having my tonsils out, I think. And there was a ward full of iron lungs.
Yeah.
We live in a wonderful age. If you get COVID virus, are you probably going to die? No, the chances are you're not. The death rate is higher than the flu. But how many people do you know that die of the flu every year? You know, the actual numbers are about 36,000 people a year on an average year. We talked about last week the fact that one of the worst years on record recently was in the winter of 2017-18, and that death toll was 80,000, I think, of the normal flu, the regular old seasonal flu. That's a lot of people, and we're not even close. We're just barely over a quarter of the way there in our country with COVID-19. So we're in a panic over a flu that just isn't that horrifically bad. We've shut down businesses. We're destroying the economy. We talked with Mike O'Reilly this morning, and I think this will segue into something that he told us. Local businesses here in Newark that are Granville area that are closing. Granville Lumber never fully recovered from the recession of 2008 through 2016. But you know, there was some recovery during the Obama years, but it was anemic. And they never really fully recovered from that. And when this thing hit, it just killed them. They're done. Granville Lumber is no more. They announced that they were closing up, and that's an asset that I no longer have. I've bought lumber down there, and that's an asset and a resource that I will no longer have available to me. That doesn't sound like a big deal, but they had a lot of employees. I'm sure they had over 20 people that were working there. They'll have to go find something else. Why? Because we shut down an economy we didn't need to shut down. As we've discussed on here, Barry, over and over and over for the last, this will be the fifth week, the models are grotesquely wrong.
And being proved worse and worse every day.
As we talked about, the models are off by factors of 20 and 25 on the number of people that are going to get it and the number of people who are going to die from it. And so what are our quote-unquote experts who are now basically, let's look at Ohio. Ohio's Governor Mike DeWine has turned over the reins of government. The legislature shut down.
By and large, yes.
By and large, they're essentially shut down. The governor is running it essentially as a dictator, and he has turned the reins of the government over to a doctor who has been nothing but fear-mongering the entire time.
Right.
In 1984 it was the 2-minute hate. Here in 2020, it's the 20-minute fear. We get to, oh, we're all going to die, we're all going to be killed, and therefore we're shutting the whole thing down, and you need to do this, and everybody in Ohio, you know, half the people in Ohio are going to be dead from this thing. And it was all based on false modeling. Barry, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to bring it up. These are all statistical arguments, okay? What the models are built on statistical arguments. And they're built supposedly on on projections based on data. Well, these weren't based on data at all. They were based on faulty data that was being fed to us by the Chinese and the World Health Organization. So when you hear that Trump has defunded the World Health Organization, there's a reason for that. They've been giving us fake numbers.
Yes, absolutely.
For months now, and the Chinese gave us fake numbers for months. First, they told us that it was, they weren't even sure it was communicable person to person, that they thought it was contact with animals that was causing this thing. Then they ginned up a bunch of numbers. So what's going on at the same time with doctors like Amy Acton and Fauci and Birx and all these people who are pushing these models on us? The models are all based on false data. Now, is that fully their fault? No, but what are they doing? They're pushing the numbers to the extremes. They're going to the outside fringes of the model. Amy Acton's been doing this since day one. When we saw that first calculation that 4.5 million Ohioans were going to be dead from this thing, Barry, that was so absurd. If you recall, the first week this came out, I said the numbers are insane. They don't mean anything. Now, the reason you, the way you make a statistical argument, let's say that, you look at the number 3 over 4, the fraction 3 over 4. That is a ratio. If you say that 3 over 4 people are going to catch this disease, and that's not the number, so don't get me wrong, but I'm making an illustration. When I say 3 over 4 of the people are going, what's the percentage? 75%.
Yeah.
Okay. But when you look at the same number, and it's 3 on the top of the ratio and X on the bottom, because that's what we have. We have X.
Mm-hmm.
What's that ratio? The answer is you don't know. And
right.
you can't know because you don't know the denominator. You know the numerator. We do know the numerator. Right now, I think, what do we have in Ohio? 5,500 cases?
7,500.
We know 7,500. Out of how many? We don't know.
We don't know because they won't release that information.
They don't know. Barry, they won't release it because they don't know.
Well, they know how many tests they've done.
Yeah.
They know how many have tested positive.
Yeah.
Now, they're not just throwing tests out there in random samples. So what actually they are doing is, if someone is many of the symptoms, or at least more than one symptom, maybe multiple symptoms of this particular disease, and they are presenting at healthcare, whether it's at the health department or at a hospital, I would have said urgent care, but I don't even think any of them are open right now. But if they're presenting with more than a single symptom, then they're being tested. So of those tests, which I believe the rough number that I saw at some point, they were talking, I think it was Dr. Acton was talking about how we had done about 60,000 tests. Rough number, because they're not releasing the specific numbers. So if we've tested 60,000 and 7,000 of them have tested positive, so a little over 10%.
About 12.5%.
But that's only of people who had enough symptoms that they actually presented themselves or suspected they had it and presented themselves for testing, who were then allowed to be tested by a medical determination, whether it's the doctor or the health director in the county or whomever is doing it. You know, the situation is, you're right, we don't know, because there is going to be a percentage, and that percentage could be a fairly significant percentage, that if you get body aches, or you run a little fever, or you got a hacking cough, or your nose is plugged up, or you got sniffles, you may believe you have a cold, or you may believe that you're coming down with something, you caught the flu or something. So those people, I mean, it could be, yes, it could just be the cold, it could just be a flu, or it could be COVID-19 that is acting either lightly symptomatically or asymptomatically. And you don't go and get tested. You don't go in and ask for, getting the full spectrum run or getting blood draw to see if you have the microbes or the antibodies or whatever. So we don't, you're right. We have absolutely no earthly idea. And the Department of Health has no idea what that denominator number is. So what did the governor come out last week and say? Just assume everybody in Ohio has it,
Joe. Yeah.
They want the denominator to be 11.6 million.
Well,
okay.
In that case,
if that's
let's
the
do
case,
that. Yeah.
Then if you look at 11.6 million people and we've only had 7,000 active cases, the percentages are ridiculously low in that respect. The number of deaths is incredibly, as a percentage of total cases, assuming 11.6 million cases, Chuck. The number of deaths is microscopic in relation to that. I believe that when the governor came out and said that, he basically was laying the groundwork, inadvertently, but he was
yes.
laying the groundwork for what has happened since, which is larger and larger groups of citizens are defying the stay-at-home orders. They are going to Columbus at the State House on the grounds, and they are protesting, and they're demonstrating, and they're demanding that the governor and our legislator open our economy back up, pull these orders back, allow businesses to reopen, and let people, because, Chuck, I would say it's hard-pressed to say that there is more than a very, very small handful of people in the state of Ohio, and those would be people who have been in a medically induced coma probably for the last 2 months, who don't know, A, that we have an outbreak of a virus, B, that they should, you know, take precautions like washing your hands and trying not to, you know, come into direct contact with people who may have it or who are showing symptoms, or C, if they so choose to do so and they know that they have other comorbidities, that's what the medical term is, but it's basically if you have health concerns, like if you have diabetes, if you have super hypertension, if you know you have heart disease or lung issues, then wear a mask. You know, if you go out in public, wear your mask, but don't force everybody else who's asymptomatic or doesn't have the virus or is healthy and doesn't have underlying comorbidities to have to A, do all the protection for you, and B, shut down all the places where people congregate, i.e. your lumber yards, your grocery, but your restaurants, you know, your retail stores, etc. Because all we're doing is creating more problems. You know, as we talked about, you know, we record this on Thursdays, and this Thursday morning we happen to do a live call in with the radio station that this runs on, and talk with Mike O'Reilly, and we talked about the whole idea that government and governmental actions and governmental actors can't be God. They can't protect you from getting a virus. They can't protect you from having your life potentially be in danger, and they certainly can't protect you from dying. We believe in the sovereignty of God, Chuck. We talked about this before. We are a biblically based organization, and we have a biblical worldview. Our biblical worldview says is that God appoints our times. He knows the numbers on our heads. He has put us in this place for such a time as this. He appoints our days, Chuck. And that's the whole key. He appoints our days. Of the 300 and whatever now 27 or 37 or 40, whatever the number is as of today, of deaths in Ohio from that are connected to COVID-19, the point is we know about them because government actors are making a point of telling us about them. However, during this same time period, Chuck, we would have had the same number of deaths. Those 300 and some deaths probably would have occurred in other ways, from heart attack, from natural causes, from strokes, from accident, you know, car wrecks, from getting hit by lightning, by electrocuting yourself, by drowning, by whatever means it happens, because it is appointed once unto a man to die, and then we face judgment, and we don't determine the length of our lives. We don't determine when we're going to die, how we're going to die. You know, some people say, what about suicides? Well, not even a suicide is really in control of what they're doing. God is in control of everything, and he appoints us our times. And government and some of our government officials, whether unconsciously, subconsciously, or, you know, or whatever, believe somehow that they are A, saving lives, and B, preventing people from dying. And temporarily, on the face of it, you might be tempted to believe that, unless you have a biblical worldview and you understand you can't prevent people from dying by forcing them to do or not do things. Because if it is their time, they will go on to their reward. They will go on to meet their maker face to face one way or another. But the idea of government trying to play God is that their response to the issue and their preventative measures just serve to spread more pain, more suffering, hasten more potential deaths from depression, suicide, stress. You know, I mean, think about it. You know, you talked about your lumber yard here. You think the owners of the lumber yard are not experiencing a lot of stress right now?
Oh, I'm sure they are.
Something that they worked to build to, and that provided income and you know, and the comfort level for their family, for the families of the people who worked there, that they provided a service for people in the community, that they were community players. And all of that's gone now because somebody in Columbus said, you're not essential and people can't come and do things with you. Or that they scared people enough to the point where people stayed away because they weren't sure what they do. Or people lost their jobs and were unemployed who normally would take that money that they were making from their jobs and go and buy things at that lumber yard to fix up their homes or to improve their standard of living, who are not doing it anymore because they can't afford to. So, Chuck, when government decides that they're going to play God, all that happens is chaos.
And basically what you have just done is pointed out the folly of the whole progressive mindset.
That was my entire goal.
Yes, exactly. Well, you accomplished that. You just pointed out the differences between progressive worldview versus Christian worldview. And in fact, anyone that tells you that that those are similar is full of nonsense. Full of another substance as well, which we will not bring up on a radio program. But the fact is that the Christian worldview is diametrically opposed to the progressive worldview. We know that God is in control. We also know that God has given us the ability to discern and to know when to take precautions and when not to. You, how much talking to mothers did you think that physicians had to do to keep them from having their children go and swim in the 1920s on hot days in a local lake?
You know, not much.
Yeah, kids who were going to pools, which were few and far between, but there were some kids that were going to pools that were, you know, treated and all that, weren't having that problem. It was kids who were going out and swimming in the local swimming hole, which was far more prevalent than it is now. But the fact is, people know when to take precautions. Something came up today when we were talking to Mike O'Reilly. He said, hey, I might be able to afford Buckeye tickets, because I had made the statement. I said, you know, in the fall, I'm not sure I would be willing to go sit in somebody else's lap in Ohio Stadium, even if the tickets were cheap, just yet. And that is my caution overriding my desire to go see a live event. You know, are there things I wouldn't do just yet? Yeah, there are. But we are past this peak. Now, I've talked about this before. This virus is not done, and it won't be done. Now, we're going to see fewer and fewer and fewer and fewer and fewer cases during the summer months. These guys at the expert level are talking about, oh, it's going to continue on through the summer. You're going to see a few cases in the summer, but very few. When it will pick back up is when it gets cold again, October. You'll see a resurgence of this virus in October. But we
probably
already,
so, yes.
Yeah, but we already know how to handle it, and we don't need to shut every business in the world down because of a virus that, if you know, Mike DeWine does not understand what he did. If you do the math, 7,500 cases out of 11.6 million gives you, and not all of them, you know, nowhere near fatal. All those 7,500, a very small number of those will die. 7,500 divided by 11.6 million is 0.06%.
Okay.
So that is, and remember, the raw number before you multiply by 100 to get the per 100 is 0.00006. we're talking absurdities. I mean, the regular flu, if you have a regular flu event, regular old seasonal flu, you're going to get a huge percentage of people that get it and a huge percentage of those people survive it. And we have the same thing going on with COVID-19.
True.
It's mostly survivable, but would you know that from listening to the local? I mean, I don't watch the local news much anymore because it's usually feel-good stuff or it's somebody trying to do a gotcha story, those kinds of things. But the fact is that my mother-in-law has it on, and she's a little bit deaf, and so therefore I can hear it. And what I'm hearing is all the time, constantly, all these boo-hoo stories. It's the boo-hoo stories.
Absolutely.
Now, I don't want it to put it that way, so I'm not sympathetic. I am sympathetic. My good friends lost a good friend. And I'm sure that if we dug around, we could find other people who have lost good friends, have lost family members, have lost, co-workers and those kinds of things to this virus. But not that many, because there aren't that many deaths in Ohio. And even in places where it's a lot, it's not much more than the regular old seasonal flu. And when I hear stories about, oh, this person was perfectly healthy, and you read the story and you go down, and probably about paragraph 12, you find out, oh, they're a cancer survivor, or oh, they had COPD, or they had part of a lung removed due to an injury, or
yeah.
It's always there is a mitigating circumstance. This virus targets people who are ill or have some physical deformity or something. It's not just, you'll notice that you're not hearing about all these young kids who were, they ginned one up the other day about virtually a newborn that died, and it turned out the baby had all kinds of health problems. And it was a presumptive COVID-19. This is one of the things I wanted to talk about when I talked about DeWine.
Sure.
Not DeWine necessarily, but his proxy, who is Amy Acton, and and what's going on at the federal level with people like Fauci and Birx, they are not only basically fudging the numbers, they're admitting openly in public to fudging the numbers.
Amazing.
This is because why would you do that? Because they know that when people see the real numbers of deaths, not the fudge numbers where somebody had a stroke and was had other risk factors and were presumed to have COVID-19 and died of the stroke, they are counting it as a COVID-19 related death. Why? Because the models don't come anywhere near matching. Now, even when you fudge the numbers, they still don't come anywhere near matching. But they are more fudged. They're closer than they would be if they hadn't fudged the numbers. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Barry, this
sure.
is the this is one of the places where you say, as a scientist, and I am trained in science, you would look at this.
Sure.
If somebody turned this in for peer review, and I'm going to make a statement that's going to make some of the medical doctors and DOs mad here pretty quick. When you put this up for peer review and it was in a regular scientific magazine, if there wasn't the political impetus behind it, that makes it different. But if it was just a standard thing and the review board started to look at these and look at these numbers and how they got them, they'd reject the article out of hand. They'd say, you cannot publish on this basis. These numbers are fake. They would not be allowed to be published. The exception is in medical journals. Medical journals, I can remember citing a medical journal in a paper I wrote when I was in biochemistry. And the professor said, do not bring to me medical journals unless they're done on a serious scientific basis, because medical journals are infamous for starting out with 500 participants. And as they go along in their study, they're whittled down to as few as 10 or 12 who are still participating, most of the control group having dropped out, and they still publish the data. You can't do that. That's not science. That's the reporting of what they hate to say is anecdotal evidence. The fact is that a certain amount of anecdotal evidence, you have to be careful with anecdotal evidence because you can draw wrong conclusions. You can draw conclusions based on correlation rather than causation. And if you don't know the difference, the mathematics is stiff. But correlation merely means that two things happen together at the same time. It doesn't necessarily point to causation. There's a fallacy called sic hoc ergo propter hoc. And it's fancy in Latin. It means after this, therefore because of this. That doesn't follow. And when these people are dying, it's a sic hoc ergo propter hoc. After this, therefore because of this. They may have some symptoms of what may be similar to this virus, and therefore they're presumed to have it and counted as a death. That just makes your numbers fake as they can be and meaningless when you actually try to sit down and do true analysis of the situation. That's what's going on. And these doctors, unfortunately, now, I think Fauci and Birx may be a little better at this, but they also know that their numbers aren't there, and that's why they're fudging. Amy Acton, I don't know what her background is, if she's an epidemiologist or not. I don't think she is. That means that she may be going on the good old tried and true medical school method of basically ginning up the numbers, which they do all the time.
I'm going to say, it wouldn't be the first time, now would it?
No. Oh, gosh, no. Like I said, we were not allowed to present medical journal data unless it was properly done and could pass muster on any other scientific journals publishing. Now, let's not kid ourselves. Do politics play a part? Look at any paper on man-made climate change. It's all politically motivated, because the data that's being presented is awful. Claims are being made, this is the warmest winter on record, blah, 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 until you find out that what they've done is they've eliminated a bunch of climate measuring stations, temperature measuring stations in the coldest places on Earth. A whole bunch of climate stations have been closed in, for instance, Siberia. Well, what happens is when you eliminate the lowest temperatures in your database and don't correct for that, don't remove the highest in your database, what happens? Well, the average temperature goes up. What a shock. That should come to shock to no one who has done any statistical analysis at all. That's the kind of science that we're getting in this thing. And it's sad.
Well, but it's a kind of science that allows them to continue on with the idea that we have to, you know, shut down the economy and force everybody to, you know, not congregate and stay inside. But Chuck, there's got to be an end game to all of this.
Well, there is an end game. They're using it to do things like change, alter at its basic level, things like our election process. Now, liberals have been trying to figure out a way to get us to do online and by mail voting. Why? Because it's easy to steal.
Right. It's easy to corrupt. You know, you just don't send absentee ballots to certain areas that you know you're going to get a higher rate of turnouts. We just saw that happen. I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago on the program with the Wisconsin primary. Come to find out, those absentee ballots never reached the folks who had requested them. That they were in three bins sitting at the post office, never delivered.
And that's what I fear. I on this election, you know, this is one of my hot buttons. This election has essentially been stolen in favor of incumbents. I'm still getting thinly veiled campaign materials from in my hotly contested district here. I'm getting thinly veiled campaign thing from what amounts to a rhino being pushed by Paul Householder and the Democrat or in the Republican caucus in the House. Why? Because he's a good little kiss up and he will do exactly what the speaker wants. And therefore, he is getting free, basically franked campaign materials. Meanwhile, the challenger, who looked seriously set to dethrone this guy, is out of money. He doesn't have any money left, so he can't send out his campaign materials. Meanwhile, most people still don't know that they have to apply for an absentee ballot and vote by mail to complete this primary process. So basically what it has become is a full re-election for incumbents, which the Republican caucus loves because they don't have to deal with the rogues and upstarts. And in the meantime, now they're talking about forcing us to do it for the November election. Well, we should be up in arms saying no. And we should be marching around the state house saying, open it up. Warn the people who are more susceptible to stay at home, but open up business. Get these businesses open so that places like Granville Lumber don't go out of business. And your favorite local restaurant. Good luck on that. A lot of those places are going to go, like it or not. They may survive this for a while. But this kind of, this kind of shutdown, it puts a dent in a very low margin business that they very often they can't recover from. 6 months later they close, and this is because of COVID-19. But that ended. We went back to work six months ago.
Yeah, and nobody gets it because that was over with a long time ago. It couldn't have been that that caused that shutdown. Things have a way of cycling, Chuck, and sometimes they take time in order to feel the full effects.
Well, what we need to be doing, I'm doing my best to do this. We need to be demanding to be allowed to walk in and vote. Now, here's the problem. Most people wouldn't do it.
Right. You're
right. Most people won't take the time to ask for an absentee ballot, and so you only get the activists. I personally think that any tax issue that's on this ballot should be null and void because it's not a real vote.
Well, I'd agree with you on that, just in principle, across the board. I'm not in favor of tax issues.
Well, yeah. You and I, though, would be... we would be considered pariahs because we're saying that. Well, you can't do that.
Such is life. It isn't the first time I've been a pariah. So
listen,
I'm okay with that.
Governments love to run these on primaries and on special elections. And,
yes, they do, because the low turnout.
And
highly motivated voters in their core groups.
Exactly.
Every time a school has a levy, Chuck, all of a sudden the school starts sending out their newsletters to the parents.
Yeah.
Well, that's the only time you ever get a newsletter from a school is when they've got a levy on the ballot. And just conveniently, that newsletter comes out just a couple of weeks before the levy is to be voted on. And it's all about all the wonderful things they could be doing at the school, but they may not be able to because, well, they're just not sure where they're going to find the money.
Oh, well, we're preparing to lay off bus drivers. We're preparing to,
exactly.
to end the... no more basketball, no more football, no more, blotty, blotty, blah sport. No more golf, no more baseball. You'll have to pay to play. That was a scam, too, the whole pay to play thing.
Right.
We just can't afford to do this, that, and another thing. Meanwhile, they got teachers making far more than the average of the taxpayers in their district for 9 months' work. 6 hours a day. We'll open a can of worms with that too. I don't care. I'm tired of hearing about the underpaid teachers. That hasn't been the case for 30 years or better. That disparity has long since been made up for. And I know in Westerville, the average teacher's salary was more than the average taxpayer salary. And mm-hmm. when you count the benefits, teachers whine, oh, we don't get that much. Our benefits aren't that good. I go, do you realize? I said, I've calculated the numbers, and because these are, first of all, I know what you make. Second of all, I know what your benefits are, and I know that you can retire at 100% of your final paycheck for your pension. I had one teacher tell me that wasn't possible, and I took him to the calculation on the teacher's salary. They have a website where you can calculate your benefits, and I went out and I calculated it. If you stayed at the same school district for, I think it was 25 years, which is not out of the realm of possibility by any stretch, it was 100% of the final salary. So I don't want to hear any of that. Again, I think this is outside the realm of where we are. I think that any tax levies and any questions ought to be null and void, because this was not a fair vote. It was not. I honestly think that they need to open it up back up for walk-in voting and create a safe environment for walk-in voting. Like when my precinct, we vote in the gym. The place is huge. Every voter is way more than 6 feet apart. So that wouldn't be a problem for us. The main problem might be standing in line outside, in which case you could just set up X's in the lot and you can stand there 6 feet apart. No problem. Now, there's another problem here, Barry. And for instance, the New Jersey governor was just interviewed by Tucker Carlson. We're recording this on Thursday, April 16th, 2020. Yes. Last night, New Jersey Governor Murphy was interviewed by Tucker Carlson. And the statement at the head of this article that I'm reading was, New Jersey Governor Murphy, I wasn't thinking of the Bill of Rights when issuing stay-at-home order, but I did consult with lawyers. Barry, these guys know they're in violation of both the federal and the state constitutions of their states. And yet they're doing it anyway, and they're doing it with impunity for the most part. Not every state is kowtowing, as you noted with Michael Riley this morning. Not every state is letting the governor get away with anything they can get away with, Pennsylvania being chief among them.
Right.
And you know more about that story. I'm going to let you relay that, but as if I could stop you. These governors are deeming things as essential based on how long people will take it. For instance, Murphy began by defending the order by arguing that there won't be an economic recovery until there's a complete or near complete healthcare recovery.
Define those terms.
Yeah, exactly. And that more testing in the state would be helpful in reopening. You think? The problem is we don't have the tests. Now, they're turning them out as fast as they can. Now, Murphy later defended deeming liquor stores an essential business, saying that the decision was based on input from addiction and recovery experts, that shutting down liquor stores would have unintended mental health and addiction prices to pay, unintended consequences. What? Barry, that is an absurd statement.
Hey, whatever. Hey, if you can get it to fly.
What he really meant was that he didn't want people in New Jersey not to be able to self-medicate, because if they're self-medicating, they won't come and storm the state house.
Well, of course.
For a little bit longer. Now, the discussion then turned to the state closing down religious services. Murphy stated there had been good common ground with faith leaders and that people are using technology to practice their faith remotely. Yes, but that is not going to last forever. Everyone's chomping at the bit to get back to church. I can tell you that. People want to get back to church. He justified closing down state parks. Look, state parks are mostly unused. Except in the parking lot and picnic areas, you can go walk around a state park and not see another person for 50 or 100 or more feet. So this is silly. Warmer weather holidays in some counties closing parks resulted in people congregating in parks before they were closed. Oh, come on. But Tucker Carlson asked him, by what authority did you nullify the Bill of Rights in issuing the order? How do you have the power to do that? And Murphy said, that's above my pay grade, Tucker. So I wasn't thinking of the Bill of Rights when we did this. Murphy continued that he looked at science and data.
That's pretty obvious. He wasn't thinking of the Bill of Rights.
Yes, he looked at science and data on social distancing. Okay, this is the progressive mindset. This is it. Science and data trump rights. Don't misunderstand what I meant when I said Trump rights has nothing to do with Trump. That's above my pay grade. Sorry, your pay grade is to look at the state and federal constitution and implement them. That is your job. You are the chief law enforcement officer of your state. And those are the laws by which you must govern. Now, I don't know what New Jersey's state constitution says, but I know that at the federal government, you can look at over and over. You can look the Constitution up and down, backwards, forwards, inside out, translate it to Swahili, and then translate it back to English and read it, and it's still going to say the same thing. You can't decree the shutdown of the American economy. The power to do that is not there, emergency or not. You know,
it's true, but that's not stopping many of these progressives from trying to do it anyway.
Well, they're not trying to do it. They're doing it. Mike DeWine has us shut down, period. This state. Now, I went out this last Saturday to get some wood to do some a project here, in which case I had to wait in line to get into a Home Depot. And it looked like a Monday morning at noon. Everybody was out. Everybody's sick and tired of being locked up. They're finding an excuse to be out because you can't force people to just sit at home. There was a real condition called cabin fever. Now, you didn't actually have a fever. It was called that. The pioneers called it cabin fever because they would have to, in harsh climates, they would be holed up the whole winter indoors. You only went out to feed the animals, muck the stalls and that kind of stuff, and then you're right back in the house. You couldn't go to town. If town was 10 miles away and you were in a buckboard, that means you had to hitch up the horses, and if it was 10 below zero, the horses had a pretty good chance of dying, and you did too on your 10-mile drive to town, which took 2 hours. If not longer, because the roads were not cleared by plows. So there was a real thing called cabin fever, and some people literally went insane, had nervous breakdowns and everything. So people have to have the opportunity to get out and be with other people, even those of us who are slightly antisocial. I speak for myself. Don't really like crowds and that kind of thing. I have the desire to get out every once in a while and just be out. Go eat dinner. Go do something. We cannot sustain this. And if these guys are talking up into June, no, that's not going to work. I think you're going to find that all the self-medication in the world by leaving the liquor stores and dope depositories open is not going to work in the meantime. At the same time, you are closing down religious services but allowing abortion clinics to operate at full steam, even though you've told people not to have elective surgeries. Gosh, what are they doing? They're having an elective abortion. What's wrong with this picture, Barry? And we have 1 minute left, so.
Everything is wrong with this picture.
Everything is wrong with this picture. The numbers are fake, and they're becoming more and more and more fake. Here's the real problem. By the time it comes to really crunch the numbers, how are they going to correct for all the fake dead that they attributed to coronavirus that had nothing to do with it?
Well, they'll figure out some way.
Well, they'll just leave them in. If it's politically expedient, they'll be left in. Real scientists will sit here and look at it and go, oh my gosh, these numbers are, there is such a thing that you call when you're looking at some data, you'll get stuff back when you're doing an analysis, and the data is all over the place. It doesn't make any sense. The numbers, there's no meaning. You call it junk data. That's what they're going to have to work with. They're going to have a lot of junk data, and they're going to have to figure out how to correct for the junk data. We'll see if that happens. Folks, if you have not yet applied for your absentee ballot, get it done. You have to have your ballot postmarked by the 28th of April. Please vote. And please turn out some of these incumbents who are bad news. If they've got a decent challenger who's actually a conservative like we do here in our district, vote for that person. Watch who you vote for state central committee. I know people who are running for that who are trying to form a coalition so they can get rid of some of these really bad players like, well, Mike DeWine, that kind of thing. Folks, get your absentee ballot request in. It's really easily done. Go to the Secretary of State's office in Ohio, Frank LaRose. Go to the Ohio Secretary of State's office. You fill out a piece of paperwork. You fold it up. You send it into the local Board of Elections, and they send you back the ballot. Now, I did it a couple of days ago. I haven't gotten mine back. But please vote. And you know what we think, and we want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.